I think failure is a word that doesn't come into my vocabulary because there's always a way of doing something. When I was first starting out, I started freelancing straight away from graduating, and I really wanted to make content. And because I wasn't working full time and I had all these ideas, I didn't have really any resources. I had a laptop to do research and I had my camera phone. And I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to do it myself with what I have, because I have the ideas, I have the skills, and I can make it happen.
Hello, and welcome to the Women of the Future podcast, a podcast made in collaboration with the Women of the Future programme, a platform built to unlock a culture of kindness and collaboration among leaders, as well as support and celebrate the successes of women. I'm Kim Rowell, and I won the media category at their awards in 2018 in recognition of my continued work as a commissioner, producer and children's author, particularly within the mental health remit. I'll be talking to my guests on this podcast about their careers, who or what gave them their first big break, their successes, failures and inspirations along the way, and how they came to be a part of the Women of the Future network. Anila Dharmi is an award-winning presenter and journalist who has worked for some of the UK's biggest media companies for nearly a decade. Currently, she freelances as a presenter and reporter for ITV News, Channel 5 News, LBC, Capital FM and Talk TV. Unabashedly confident, calm and certainly compelling, Anila has adeptly utilised her professional approach to host live debates on hard-hitting topical issues, interview a diverse range of people from all sectors of society, from MPs and experts to A-list celebrities, but most importantly, is gifted with the unique ability to provide a space for people to share their stories and experiences on TV, radio and online.
I grew up in Essex, where I still live, in a loving family, and education was really one of the key values that I grew up with. So that's always been at the forefront, and yeah, a loving, stable family home.
And did you enjoy school and university? Were you a good student? Were you diligent? What was that experience like for you?
I was definitely teacher's pet. I loved school. I loved studying and I loved learning. And I always have. I think my love for learning has never gone away. In fact, it's probably expanded to life, where I see life as one big learning journey of progress. And that's really what my school life was like. I progressed from my primary school, which is just up the road, to my secondary school, where I was deputy head girl. Ooh. And that's a state school. And I was a finalist in a nationwide business competition. I studied my business AS while I was doing my GCSEs.
Wow.
So I was very studious, and then progressed to another sixth form in Essex, a really good reputation, where I was sixth form captain. And yeah, it was really, I think teachers really believed in me, other than the fact I got brilliant grades, which they loved. They did believe in me. And I think the key thing is that I felt I belonged. And because of that, I was really confident. I've always been really confident. And that really is because teachers loved me. And, you know, people in authority trusted me. Then obviously that's why I was nominated into positions like deputy head girl and prefect. And I set up the anti-bullying committee when I was at school. I cared about people. I cared about education. And I think I was always driven by my values. So it was in year 10 when I first did work experience at a local radio station. And that literally was because my teacher said, if you want to go and do something outside of what we can offer you, go ahead and do it. There were no barriers. So yeah, I loved my school life. And even while I was at sixth form, I was asked to speak to the local council sometimes about education policy or policy for young people. I set up a dance workshop for girls that I do every Monday evening, and then expanded that to saying to them, look, if you want to chat for half an hour, we can always talk about how your school life's going. So I think everything in my life has always been about progression, expansion, and how to do things a bit differently. And that has been because I've been surrounded by a good support network.
I find it really interesting to hear about your experiences, because a lot of it sounds like it is rooted in kindness. And the interesting thing they say about children in particular is that they stop maybe being so kind as they get older and they get embarrassed by their peers, or their behaviour is called out for being too kind or too nice, or like, why are you doing that? Ugh. You know, that kind of peer on peer reactionary type interaction. But it just sounds like for you that wasn't the case. Am I right? Or were you always as confident, I guess, is my question.
I have always been confident. And that probably also stems from my home life, that I was surrounded by women who were real pioneers in their fields. I come from a British South Asian background and I'm third generation. But that second generation really had to break down barriers and doors and stereotypes, and even getting an education was a barrier for my aunts, who broke glass ceilings before me. So I think they instilled that confidence, school life instilled that. And then with my peers, I think, I don't know if I'm different in the fact that in my year, it was really cool to be clever. So we all used to be competitive in a really healthy way. And that would make you want to do better and be better. And it was the same in my sixth form. Education and grades were really valued, and everybody would want to do well. So I think that's why I never really had that. It was a really happy period in my life. And I think attending a state school, I never realised that I went to a state school. I didn't know there was anything different until I left, because I grew up in a village, really, in Essex. Mm. And it was only until I left my small town that I was like, oh, there are such things as private schools, and people's parents have really good connections. And I had no idea that there was this whole world out there. And it's just London, which is just up the road and where I work every day now. And I think that's really driven me, because while it worked for me that, you know, ignorance was bliss, and I had no idea, and I just carried on pursuing my dream, completely ignorant of the fact that I had no connections and was making my own. I think now that drives me to help other people, open the door for them, and just offer advice where I can, mentoring where I can, because, yeah, life can be easier, actually.
It's also like you say, until people start pointing out the differences, again, particularly when you're developing and growing up, it's like, well, it doesn't matter, really. We're all in this together. Let's all be collaborative. Let's all support each other. That's a really nice approach, or it sounds like a lovely approach to have. But so you mentioned there you did some work experience when you were in year 10 at a radio station. Did you carry on doing more work experience? How did you enter out of education and into the working world? Or were you more working in a restaurant or a cafe? Or how did you get out there into the big wide world?
I realised that I loved media from that one work experience for 2 weeks. And I also loved studying and learning. So I was like, while I'm in the flow of studying and writing essays and doing exams, I'm going to pursue that for as long as I can. So I ended up doing a master's in philosophy and literature from Warwick University, because I just loved learning and reading and writing. So that was really for the love of it. But up until that point, I'd been doing work experience in every place I could get into. I'd be emailing editors, emailing managers, anybody I could find their email address. And I'd be persistent, you know, it's just about making those connections. And so I did work experience at LBC, Red, I did it in sports. I didn't know which area I wanted to work in, what field, whether it was magazines, newspapers, TV, radio. And I just explored all the time while I was studying.
I think also that's the most important thing to do, because I did something similar, and obviously I work in media as well. But like you say, you're testing the waters, right? Because you try, it's almost like trying clothes on. You don't know if it's going to fit, if it's comfortable, are you going to like it? So you might as well just get yourself out there and do as much as you can. But I appreciate for some people that's limiting. And it was for me in a sense, because I reckon if I totted it up, I'd probably work for free for like a year and a half of my life or something crazy like that. But it's what you can afford to do, what you're, you know, capable of doing. But
And I definitely agree with that, because I didn't actually factor in money, I think, for years, until one of my aunts said to me just randomly one evening, "Don't you think you should start getting paid now for what you're doing? You've been in it for a long time." And I said, "Oh, I hadn't considered that. Yeah, maybe I could ask for some money now." And it is that privilege of living at home, and that did provide me with the ability to be able to explore and see what was out there.
Yeah. Also, though, you've already said it, you know, you mentor people, you try and guide people, you try and provide that inspiration. But for you, is there a standout person, or maybe there was a moment that really helped ignite your feeling and your sentiment that what you were doing was the right thing?
Well, that is an interesting question. I feel like every moment has been standout because every moment's been crucial to where I am today. I think if I hadn't taken all the steps I'd taken, I wouldn't have the amount of experience. It's like that saying, get your 10,000 hours in. And it really is that. I have worked in so many different places, doing so many different things, from producing, presenting, reporting, writing, editing, self-shooting. So I think in terms of people, there are so many, because it literally is everybody who said yes, or everybody who's believed in me or encouraged me, because it is a difficult industry. Like anything, you have to gain the skills, work hard, be consistent, and keep pushing forward. So I'd say it's literally everybody who said yes, and also everybody who has watched or listened to my work and found it useful or appreciated it. And that is always stand out to me, that I think, you know, my work, I feel that it is a duty, it is service based. And when people come up to me and say, "We really appreciated your radio program, it was really distinct. I launched a radio program during the pandemic on Sunrise Radio because I knew vaccine hesitancy was highest within ethnic communities. So me and the owner of Sunrise said, look, let's launch this politics show on a Sunday morning." And I'd travel every morning from 6 a.m. on a Sunday, travel 2 hours to West London and put this show on. And we had MPs, politicians, experts, and people could phone in. And that felt really good. You know, you're bringing decision makers to people in their homes, people listening in the kitchen to the radio, being able to ask questions. So I think it's when, you know you're making some kind of a difference or making some kind of impact, and being of use to people is standout.
Yeah, and information is power in that situation, isn't it? It's like a public service. You're just giving people the information they need to make an informed decision, which is like everything that you would hope the media is able to do. But
exactly.
I think also I find it interesting that you said that everyone who said yes, but also I would guess too, is everyone that said no as well, because there's a certain amount of resilience and emotional fortitude that comes with the knockbacks. I don't like the word failure because I feel like it's, you can learn so much from, and I fail all the time in like little ways, micro ways and macro ways, you know. But have you got any thoughts on failure or resilience and how that's been a factor in your career so far?
Yeah, and I have received so many rejections. When I was first starting out, sometimes you wouldn't hear back. And somebody said to me, when you get a response that's a rejection email, you should feel happy that somebody's taken the time to read your email. And I think that's actually a really good way of looking at it. So there were those times. I think failure is a word that doesn't come into my vocabulary because there's always a way of doing something. When I was first starting out, I started freelancing straight away from graduating, and I really wanted to make content. And because I wasn't working full time and I had all these ideas, I didn't have really any resources. I had a laptop to do research and I had my camera phone. And I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to do it myself with what I have, because I have the ideas, I have the skills, and I can make it happen. So I used to make short documentaries for my YouTube channel. And it was from that that I got my first presenting job. So I think the resilience comes in having ideas, having purpose, and believing, and also making things happen. It's about using your initiative, using what you do have, and you're creating the results yourself rather than, you know, waiting for them to happen.
Yeah, and reframing it to turn it around to keep the momentum there. Your career has been so diverse and varied. I was looking back through your bio and through your website and all of the information before speaking to you, and you've interviewed everyone from Sir Charles Kennedy when you were 16 years old, which is amazing, but also then Rose McGowan as well. So there's literally couldn't be more diverse ends of the spectrum there.
Yeah.
Have you had, I was desperate to ask this question, it might be a bit like fluffy, but have you had a favourite person to interview?
I don't have a favourite. Trying to think, because you're right, I have interviewed so many people from so many walks of life. I think each person I've interviewed has been relevant or interesting in some way that provides something to viewers or listeners. Mm. I think that's what the key thing always is for me. So from interviewing the Home Secretary to interviewing someone in their home, each has a purpose. That's really what it is for me, is what does this interview do and what impact does it have, and how does it provide some form of information or entertainment or engagement by people who are watching or listening. Even during the pandemic, I did Zoom interviews on a Sunday with musicians, just so that people had some live entertainment with well-known names in their home. There's always a purpose and there's always an intention that drives the interviews. I think that's why they've been so diverse, because they're for a moment in time.
So across everything you've done, is there any one thing in particular that stands out for you or that you're particularly proud of?
I think I'm always grateful for the response I get for my work. That's definitely stand out. And that does drive me to carry on, because I think this is really having an impact in some way. A standout moment, there have been so many. I think that is partly because I do live by my values, and intentionally. I create a to-do list every morning with something on there that I know leads to a path of progression in some way, even if it's 10 minutes of action. I know it's a form of progression. So because everything's intentional, everything is quite standout and meaningful. I do think, and it's a feeling I'll never forget, is when I was told that I'd passed my interview and screen test for Channel 5 News. Mm. And this was while I was going through my divorce at the time. And I contacted my granddad. I called him and I said, turn Channel 5 News on at 12 o'clock. I think I was on at 12:15. I said, just sit there and watch Channel 5. He goes, okay, put the phone down, went and presented my first bulletin. And he was the first person to call me. And I could hear so much pride in his voice. He was saying every name under the sun, every news presenter, you're like, Trevor McDonald, there's this, there's that. And I was like,
That's so lovely.
He was so proud, and it felt like my granddad had come here with nothing, and he'd built a whole life for us, and you know, his children, grandchildren. And then my parents had worked hard. They were market traders my whole life, and I used to work on the markets with them. I've got two other sisters, but I was really good with sales. So I'd always be the one roped in to help. Even, you know, whether it was raining, snowing, sunny, we'd be on the market stall. We had a really big store. We used to sell menswear. And because I was so confident, I used to be able to just talk to anybody and, you know, shout two shirts for a tenner kind of thing. And it did feel like it had all come full circle, because now I was on a national station. And it was like, yeah, this is what all the hard work's been for, because my generation now are fully in society and we're making a difference. We're giving other people information. We're in other people's homes. So that was a really good feeling.
That's such a lovely story. And I'm sure it will resonate with so many people. Like you say, the meaning behind it all is so important. How did you first hear about the Women of the Future programme and how you're involved with them now?
Well, I'm really pleased to say that I won the Asian Women of Achievement Award. And that was incredible. And life has been even more amazing since I won. And I visited Downing Street for the first time with the other finalists. So that's how I know of the Women of the Future Network. And it's such an incredible network. It really is. To be around women who are like-minded in that we all want to work together to create success for each other, that is so powerful. Mm-hmm. And there are women from all walks of life doing so many incredible things. And the power of collaboration is strength, is what I believe. And so that's how I know about the network.
Congratulations as well. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
I have some quick fire questions just to finish. So if you are ready, here we go. Yeah. What would you describe as your greatest success?
Living by my values every day.
And your greatest failure?
Being impatient.
I feel that one, yeah. The mantra of Women of the Future is kindness and collaboration. What does that mean to you in both your personal and professional life?
It means strength in power, helping each other and thriving together.
Is there anything that scares you?
Not doing enough.
Until she keels over. Neela is going for. And what's left on your to-do list?
Oh, so many things. So many things. I think since the pandemic, because I was a real planner, and it would be a 1-year plan, 6 months, 1 year, 5 years. Mm. But since the pandemic, I realized you just don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So the to-do list every day is to live happily, make some form of progression, whether that's personally, professionally, touch people in a way that makes them feel happy or better or well-informed. And yeah, to live life with intention and kindness.
And also, you're so generous with your time as well, that you're a supporter and ambassador for a few charities as well. Is that something that you obviously enjoy, but is it something that you want to do more of?
Absolutely, I love it. I'm a UK ambassador of Binti, which is a period charity, and of Barnardo's. And actually, they're both so important to me because Barnardo's, it has that education element and children and young people. And it is about providing the opportunity to the next generation. It's about opening those doors and showing them that anything is possible, no matter where you are, who you are, what your background is. There are always people there like me, like yourself, Kim, who are ready to help in whatever way we can. With Binti, the period charity, that's all about empowering girls and women, providing them with an education so they understand what's happening to their bodies during menstruation and with menstrual products so that they are able to go about their daily lives and do what they need to do and break glass ceilings while they've got a pad on. So it's all about, I like helping with those grassroots. And also, you know, I started Create Public Speaking Confidence sessions during the pandemic because sometimes I was at home and I thought there are so many people at home. This is a chance to help them progress. And I, as we've talked about so many times on this, that I am confident and I can public speak. So I thought this is one way I can really help other people. And that's really benefited people. You know, they've said to me after that they've done well in a job interview because of it, or they've got a job after the sessions, or they've been able to present confidently in a meeting. So as well as helping with those grassroots, I do like seeing people thriving in their everyday as well. And I definitely want to do more of it.
Confident, inspirational, uplifting. You are. You know I love you. It's been lovely having this chat with you. I'm sure it would have inspired an awful lot of people listening. So huge, huge thanks to you.
Thank you. And I'll take this time to thank you as well, Kim, because you have also believed in me and encouraged me. You kindly asked me to host the RTS event, Operation Lion, broadcasting a once in a nation's lifetime event. And that was really important to me, actually. So I was really, really pleased that you asked me to host that. And I'm so grateful to you for asking me to be on this.
Oh, you're a dream. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Women of the Future podcast. If you enjoyed it, please hit the subscribe button. And while you're there, why not give us a rating and review? You know you want to. For more about the Women of the Future Awards, network and initiative, please visit www.womenofthefuture.co.uk. See you soon.